Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Well, I am trying to get through you, but the voice is, was full of these Texas things, you know. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. It's about 35 degrees, so I just don't know what's going to happen. And the streaming doesn't seem to be going too well here. Again, it hasn't come up yet. Trying to get the music to come up, and that hasn't come up yet either. Okay, now let's see here. Was it talking twice? Maybe that's the reason. Let's see. Oh, all right. Let's see what we have here. This is something that Mr. Trump will be.
Would never die.
Well, you know, I had to play Aretha because I believe at this point she's the only one that can help Mr. Donald. And, you know, it's really a shame. Every day we go on TV, every single day, more things are being revealed. And every single day, these morons give this man more money. There's no way he can run for president with all these suits going up against him. He's going to be convicted in Georgia. So they did a check on how much money, how much his percentages that people want him. It's down to 39%. 60-something percent don't want him to run, Republicans. 60-something percent. Now, why? By the way, I had to take out my new earplugs I have because I don't know if it was the recording that I had that's faulty. I'm going to find out. And or the headset. So I got my regular headset on, and I'm stuck to one place now. I can't walk over. But anyway, as I was saying, more and more is coming out, and the people still give him money. But it's not the same amount of people. He's not going to have the same amount of people who want him to be president. This is he's giving you the old scam. It's a grift. Now, I told you people to watch the film The Grifter, the original one. It's in black and white. That's when you – that's the real grifter. I mean, let the Lawrence O'Donnell – he did a very good explanation about this a couple of days ago. Just listen.
Denied. That is the last word in the first sentence of today's Supreme Court decision, and it is the last word on Donald Trump's unprecedented, the court called it, unprecedented attempt to overrule the current president of the United States, Joe Biden, and block the National Archives from handing over all of the records and documents of the Trump presidency that the January 6th committee has demanded. Donald Trump and his lawyers did not have to read beyond the first sentence of the Supreme Court's very short decision today to know that the Trump dream of a total cover-up has died. The unsigned order by the court notes that only Justice Clarence Thomas disagrees with the court's decision. All three of the judges appointed to the court by Donald Trump joined in crushing the Trump cover-up dream today. The first sentence says, quote, the application for stay of mandate and injunction pending review presented to the Chief Justice and by him referred to the court is denied. The Supreme Court said that Donald Trump's assertion of executive privilege was unprecedented coming from a former president in a case like this, but the court said that Trump's request would have been denied even if he were still president. Quote, because the Court of Appeals concluded that President Trump's claims would have failed even if he were the incumbent, his status as a former president necessarily made no difference to the court's decision. Harvard's constitutional law professor Lawrence Tribe offered his scholarly opinion of the court's decision today, saying, this is huge. Tonight, the January 6th committee released this statement, quote, the Supreme Court's action tonight is a victory for the rule of law and American democracy. The Select Committee has already begun to receive records that the former president had hoped to keep hidden, and we look forward to additional productions regarding this important information. Our work goes forward to uncover all the facts about the violence of January 6th and its causes. We will not be deterred in our effort to get answers for the American people, make legislative recommendations to strengthen our democracy and help ensure nothing like that day ever happens again. And leading off our discussion tonight is Neil Katyal, law professor at Georgetown University, and most importantly, a former acting U.S. Solicitor General who has practiced before the United States Supreme Court repeatedly. He is an MSNBC legal analyst. Neil, I give you the floor in your reaction to the court.
Well, Lawrence, I don't think I've seen this much excitement about a late-night literary release since the final Harry Potter book came out. And why is everyone so excited? Because it's a dark time in our country. People are worried about voting being under assault and rules and laws more generally. And here we've got, at least for this moment, the rule of law coming back, and in a really profound way. I was on your show last night. I told you to predict this result, that the Supreme Court wasn't going to hear this executive privilege case. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. They denied Donald Trump's claim 8-1. So what's the case about? Executive privilege is this idea. It's a good idea. It's the idea that presidents need a zone of secrecy around their decision-making, like foreign affairs and things like that. You don't want, like, treaty negotiations to spill out into open court. What it's not about is plotting a coup and overthrow of American democracy. Trump tried to invoke it for that reason, and his claim was a loser from the start. The trial court rejected it right away. The circuit court, our nation's second highest court, took 9 days to write a 68-page opinion, blowing it out of the water. And now today, the U.S. Supreme Court, which is a quite conservative Supreme Court, to put it mildly, but totally threw out Trump's claims. Certainly.
Now, this is this is great, what has happened. It has never been done before. Well, there never has been a criminal of this stature in the White House before. And Trump's White House passed around PowerPoint presentations on how to end American democracy. I mean, can you do that? Now, I just see breaking news right now. Judge issues an injunction on federal vaccine mandates. Well, this is going to be turned around. You can't have the executive branch be told that he can't have his workers protected. Can't be done. I think that's going to be reversed. Now, getting back to what I was saying, Trump's White House passed around a PowerPoint presentation on how to end democracy. The House Select Committee investigated the release of slides from a PowerPoint presentation calling for President Trump to declare a national security emergency in order to delay the certification of results of 2020. The presentation headline was referred to in an email provided to the committee by Mark Meadows. Meadows is the one who gave this up. Nobody else, no little Shamil, the second highest ranking man in the government. The second highest ranking man in the government after the president. Of course, we didn't have a president. We had Trump. So this man, as far as I'm concerned, was really the president. And Mark Meadows issued this thing. He said the former White House chief of staff, who had a rough couple of weeks, well, it's been over a month now, revelation in the latest piece of evidence that Trump and his inner circle, including his allies in Congress, were very, very activated and very aggressive trying to overturn the results of the election, which Trump lost handedly. He did not lose by a few little votes. He lost handedly. The PowerPoint presentation, which spanned 38 pages and was titled Election Fraud, did they know? Foreign Interference and Options for January 6th, was part of an email sent on January 5th, the day before the attack on the Capitol. The email pertained to a briefing that was to be provided on the Hill. Hugo Lowell, of The Guardian. Tweeted slides from the presentation on Thursday detailing a conspiracy theory-laden plan for Vice President Pence to install Republican electors in states where fraud occurred, and for Trump to declare a national emergency and for all electronic voting to be rendered invalid, citing foreign control of election voting machines. Now that's why Mr. Giuliani and that nitwit woman that's with him and four others are now, well, not now, they are being sued. I think it's $1 billion they're being sued for. Now, as it goes on, that the letter that Meadows had provided text messages in which he discussed a highly controversial plan to overturn the election results by appointing alternate electors in certain states. He says, I love the idea. I love it. Meadows replied to the idea, which was sent to him by a lawmaker. Meadows discussed the same plan, which was described as a direct and collateral attack, in a separate email. The letter referred to the PowerPoint presentation as well, but did not provide details of its contents. The letter sent on Wednesday, which was addressed to Meadows' attorney, explained that the committee had no choice but to move to hold Meadows in contempt of Congress for his refusal to comply with the subpoena. Now, remember, they sent him a subpoena. He said, look, months ago, he said, hey, I'll go in front of any committee. It doesn't matter to me because I have nothing to hide. I will give up any information. And he gave up like 600 pages worth of information. That's why they have this. And now he says that he's not going to come to see them. He's not obeying the subpoena because he knows he's dead meat. If he may be dead meat walking already. I mean, because, you know, Trump probably got a contract out of him. Okay, if Meadows is refusing to comply, did the committee get a hold of all these damning documents from the former chief of staff? Well, Meadows last week reached an agreement to cooperate, turned over the material, and then earlier this week changed his mind and is now stonewalling the committee. He's now suing the committee in an attempt to block the subpoena. Well, if they did not block all the information that Trump had, I mean, not they, the Supreme Court, do you think they're going to block anything that the chief of staff has? Not going to be that way. Not going to happen. It's unclear what exactly inspired the reversal. I can tell you what it was. There's a man called D-U-R-P-M-F. D-U-R-P-D-U-R-M-P-F. That's what it is. Trump. That's who did it. To which the chairman, Bernie Thompson, said the committee tries repeatedly to identify with specificity the area of inquiry were subject to privilege, but Meadows wouldn't cooperate. It's also possible that Meadows decided to buck the committee after reports began to circulate that Trump was pissed at him for revealing a bunch of damning information about how the White House covered up the details of Trump's bout with COVID last year. Remember? He said he was fine. He almost died. They had to give him that special drug. Not no COVID vaccine. He got a special drug. It's also possible that Meadows just isn't very bright. Well, that's probably true. He isn't bright. And the problem is, they were running this country. Regardless, the committee is now in possession of a trove of documents indicating the extent of Trump's very real efforts to overturn the election results. efforts that circulated in a throng of supporters storming the Capitol in a violent attack that resulted in 5 deaths and dozens of injured police. Now, can we stop and look at this? This man is so brain dead. This is the man who was actually running the country. Trump was not running the country. All he cared about, how much money could he make? And when they close in and find out how much I cheated him out of, oh, we're going to really get to that. We're going to talk about the his place where he lived, but that's for later. Okay, Liz Cheney said last week that the committee is preparing to hold several weeks' worth of public hearings that will tell the story of the riot at the Capitol in vivid color. She also added that Thursday, that's to be last Thursday, that the committee has met for nearly 300 witnesses and it is conducting multiple depositions and interviews every week, and that the experts at ruling entity on whether it can obtain Trump's White House documents, the investigation is firing on all cylinders. Well, they did get all the documents. Now, before we get to Trump's, well, this might lead into it anyway. Uncle Donald and the Attorney General of New York. Yes, Uncle Donald, Attorney General of New York. Letitia James. I mean to tell you. But we also have Ivanka. Did you know that we have Ivanka? Oh, yeah. Let's a little bit of Ivanka. Ooh, gee. Nope. That's the wrong one. Wrong one. How it goes. Oh, wait a minute. I'm listening to my ear blasting my ear off, and I didn't want to hear that. Which one is it? It's this one here. Okay, this was on Nicole Wallace last week, and Nicole gave the story up. She gave it up. I'm telling you. She gave it up. Oh, wait a minute. I can't do that. I got to get out of here. She told what everybody has been waiting for. Yeah, that's what she did. She told what everybody was waiting for. What is going to happen to all the kiddies? His kiddies. What is going to happen to all his kiddies? It's many, many questions. So let's listen to a little bit of it.
But I think it's also important for the American people to understand how dangerous...
That's the wrong one. That's the wrong one. This is the one, I think. Sorry.
But I think it's also important for the American people to understand how dangerous Donald Trump was. We know as he was sitting there in the dining room next to the Oval Office, members of his staff were pleading with him to go on television to tell people to stop. We know Leader McCarthy was pleading with him to do that. We know members of his family. We know his daughter. We have firsthand testimony that his daughter Ivanka went in at least twice to ask him to please stop this violence.
That was January 6th Select Committee Vice Chair Liz Cheney a couple weeks ago telling ABC News that the panel had evidence that Ivanka Trump, the ex-president's daughter, had begged her father to call off the attack on the Capitol while it was happening. That allegation is among the many explosive details laid out in the January 6th Select Committee's letter released today to Ivanka Trump, all of it showing us as a public for the first time how much the committee already knows about what happened inside the West Wing on January 6th and the run-up to it. And that's before the nation's highest court rejected the ex-president's bid to cover up his actions and documents before, during, and after the insurrection, giving the committee access to a massive trove of White House records. Joining us now is Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren of California, member of the January 6th Select Committee. Neil and Carol are still here as well. Congresswoman, I wanted... The letter is the most revealing you all have been with some of this evidence, and I want to get into it. But first, Ivanka Trump has responded to the invitation through a spokesperson who has a weird response. It says, as the committee knows, Ivanka didn't speak at the January 6th rally. I read the letter three times. I didn't see anything suggesting she had. And then her spokesperson says she stated at 3:15 that day that any security breach or disrespect to our law enforcement is unacceptable. The violence must stop immediately. So they put her quotes in, I guess, from the day. But did you get any response to your offer to schedule an interview with her in early February?
I don't believe she's responded to that, and that statement from her spokesperson makes me think they actually hadn't seen the letter yet, because it doesn't really respond to the request that we made of Ms. Trump. Obviously, we have the direct testimony of General Kellogg about what he heard the former president say to the former vice president. We would like to talk to Ms. Trump about that, but we have direct testimony that Ms. Trump went in multiple times, at least twice, maybe more, to her father. I believe she was alone with him. To ask him to call off the violence. We'd like to talk to her about that. We've got some indication that the former president was told by his legal staff that what he was urging the vice president to do was unconstitutional and illegal. We'd like to know if Ms. Trump knows anything about that. So we hope that she does respond in a positive fashion as a patriot and as an American who wants to get to the truth.
I want to deal with everything you just shared. And let me start with something you just said. This is in the letter. The committee has information suggesting that President Trump's White House counsel may have concluded that the actions President Trump directed Vice President Pence to take would violate the Constitution or would be otherwise illegal. Did you discuss those issues with any member of the White House counsel's office? To your knowledge, this is to Ivanka Trump, were any such legal conclusions shared with President Trump? And the citation is a document in possession of the committee. Are you able to tell us if you have a document created by the counsel's office or reference to a document created by the counsel's office with a legal analysis that asking Pence to do more than his ceremonial function would be illegal or unconstitutional?
I can't address that at this point, Nicole, and I think I'm sure your other guests will note that when you're doing an investigation, you don't necessarily want to reveal every piece of information that you've already obtained. That's going to help us get to the direct truth. I think the letter speaks for itself. We have some questions. We think Ms. Trump can answer them, and we certainly hope she does.
Congresswoman Carol Lenning and Phil Rucker had reported when their book came out that White House counsel Pat Cipollone believed there was a chance Donald Trump could be arrested on January 6th. And Sean Hannity's texts, which have been released by the committee, allude to a walkout, a mass resignation by the counsel's office. Have you spoken to members of Donald Trump's White House counsel's office?
Have I personally? No. But we are seeking to get all of the information we can. Let me divert for just 1 minute.
Sure.
Because a very significant decision was reached yesterday by the Supreme Court that will allow the committee to receive a very large amount of information from the archives. We hope that the Trump White House complied with the law and actually delivered all the material they were required to deliver to the archives. And we think that some of the answers will be found within that material. So I think at this point, that's the best I can answer your question.
It gets to something Dan Goldman and others have made, points they've made, that your document case, the strength of the document case, paper case, may make conversations about the few folks who have avoided your subpoenas irrelevant. And I won't put you on the spot, but is let me put up first what you're going to be getting. So this is what the Supreme Court decision frees up. Your committee will be receiving
draft texts of a presidential speech for January 6th, presidential diaries, activity logs, notes, remarks related to 1-6, talking points for Trump's press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, related to the 2020 election, a draft executive order on election integrity, handwritten list of potential or scheduled briefings and calls concerning election issues, and a draft proclamation honoring deceased Capitol Police officers. When do you expect to have...
Among other things. I mean, we've asked for more than that, but that's a pretty good list.
When do you, and I worked in a White House, and again, it's a known unknown that the Trump White House, whether they complied with Records Acts and whether all their speeches were staffed the way a normal White House staffs, everything is on paper in a normal White House. There's no indication they were normal. But when do you expect to have these items and everything else that was hung up on this decision?
Very soon. We have received a little bit of information last night, and we're expecting a large amount of material in the coming days.
And you think that all of it will be, I mean, it all exists and has been identified by the National Archives, so the decision frees up an immediate transfer. Let me ask you about some... In the letter to Ivanka Trump, there's this passage about Chris Miller's testimony, and it says this: Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller, who was in the chain of command and reported directly to the president, has testified under oath that the president never contacted him at any time on January 6th and never at any time issued him any order to deploy the National Guard. Miller did speak with Vice President Pence on January 6th, but not with President Trump. The committee has identified no evidence that President Trump issued any order or took any other action to deploy the Guard that day. Nor does it appear that President Trump made any calls at all to the Department of Justice or any other law enforcement agency to request deployment of their personnel to the Capitol. What are you pursuing with this line of inquiry?
Well, we're trying to find out exactly what happened. I personally have found, you know, as I was watching the riot out my window on the 6th, I wondered where was the National Guard. And I think there's more to know. We're getting, you know, I'm not at liberty to disclose testimony without a vote of the committee, and so we've not had that. But I'll say that the picture is still murky. One thing that... the quote that you just read would indicate is that the president failed in his duty to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. It was under assault during that riot. We'd like to know more about that.
I mean, one thing that I thought when I read that, I worked for George W. Bush, and when he had a colonoscopy and was under anesthesia, there was a legal process briefed to the press and other world leaders that while he was under anesthesia, the vice president, Dick Cheney, would be in charge, and it was the butt of some jokes from critics, and it was internally very known that it was a process. I mean, the vice president can't just step into the chain of command. Is it your sense that Donald Trump wasn't functioning as the country's commander-in-chief during the insurrection?
Well, we'd like to know more about it, but obviously Vice President Pence was in some danger. He was in the Capitol himself. The mob was chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," and there was a variety of calls going into the Defense Department from people who were in danger. So I think it was not necessarily a transfer of power so much as, you know, nothing was happening from the White House apparently, and there was a real threat to our Constitution, to our system of government, and to the life of our Vice President.
Are you pursuing any evidence, though, that he functioned as the country's commander-in-chief? I know that what Chris Miller testified to was a conversation with Vice President Mike Pence,
right,
but it's not clear who called in, ultimately, the National Guard. And Miller has said he never talked to Trump that day.
Let me just say, we're still exploring that, including a deposition today, and there are some more threads to pull to find out the answer.
It is, I know that there's so much more that you have than you can talk about, and when things come out, we're really grateful to get to talk to you about it and to have you enhance our understanding of it. Thank you so much for making some time to talk to us today, Congresswoman.
Thank you. Anytime.
Now, this has become a major problem. He's not only just staring at the screen, they would kill as many people as possible, congressmen, in that room, so he could have free will to do what he wants. Nobody could talk to him. Nobody could get him to do anything else but what he wanted to do, not even Ivanka. How long are we going to let this go on? We need to let it go on as long as we know that there's something else out there, because you've got to kill, you know the old saying, you got to kill the king. I mean, you just can't shoot him. You got to cut off his hands, cut off his legs, and cut off his head. All this information is enough to put anybody behind bars for 20 years or more. Yeah, anybody ever see the... And I've asked this before, I believe, but I haven't heard any answers. Anybody ever see the last year of the 24? Well, in it, the president was involved with the Russians. And a small group of people found out. And they told it to the elite group that Bauer belonged to. But Bauer was framed by the Russians, so he was in hiding. But he had to come out of hiding to get the information to show that this man was actually a Chinese input. When he did, they all said, gee, we're so sorry that we didn't believe we believe what the president was saying because he's the president of the United States, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the CIA didn't believe it. And they're the ones that got him to come back. They got him off out of prison where they sent him. And what happened in the end, when the new president was being sworn in, his job was to kill the new president, the old president's job. And when Bauer got rid of all the people that was sent there to get rid of him, he said, well, I got to do it myself. But they got rid of him. They got rid of him. And this is what that president did everything to get rid of this new president. Everything. And framing him, doing all, you name it, he did it. Well, this is what Trump did. This is what he did. He did the same thing. I mean, he not only put out a PowerPoint presentation, was part of putting out a PowerPoint presentation by his people that would have everything be all screwed up. We would never, ever vote again. He would only permit the voting from the people that would vote for him. Same thing that Putin does. How did he get 110% more people voting for you than 100%? This is what he wants. So here's the thing. We need to make sure that these people get 120% of everything. That means you're going to get double. You might get triple on some things. But you need to get it so there's no squeak by. We can't say, oh, time out. This is not true. He said the word "the." I never said the word "the." No. There will be no ambiguity in this. He needs to be crushed. That's why Letitia James is going to do her thing in the at the Attorney General's office in New York. She's going to do her thing. And let's just listen to I believe it was Lawrence and Oh, Lawrence, I never played that area. Her name was Lawrence. Yeah, Lawrence and Dan Goldman. I think that's where they talk about some of the things. Dan Goldman's an excellent lawyer and has been involved in, he was the first lawyer for the first impeachment of Trump. Let's listen to him.
Denied. That is the last word in the first sentence of today's Supreme Court decision, and it is the last word on Donald Trump's unprecedented, the court called.
Now, I played that already. That's the last word that we shall hear on this nut job. It's Nicole Wallace I wanted to play. I'm sorry, Lawrence, I got you mixed up. Just listen to this.
I don't want to see Donald Trump go to prison or Don Jr. or Eric or Ivanka or Jared or any of them simply because I politically disagree with virtually everything that they stand for. I want them to go to prison for the crimes that they committed. And in this specific case, Attorney General Tish James has all the evidence. She has what's called documentary evidence. She has the goods.
Wow. Hi again, everyone. It's 5 O'Clock in New York. She has the goods, not exactly the words you want to hear if your last name is Trump. Because what the former fixer to the former president, Donald Trump, is talking about there is a significant update in the New York Attorney General's civil investigation into the ex-president's business dealings. In a statement released late Tuesday, Attorney General Letitia James says she has, quote, significant evidence that suggests Donald J. Trump and the Trump Org falsely and fraudulently valued multiple assets and misrepresented those values to financial institutions for economic benefit. She says she is seeking legal action to compel Donald Trump Jr., and Ivanka Trump to provide sworn testimony. James's statement was released alongside a massive court filing detailing specific examples of the ex-president and his company lying about the value of its assets, findings that are very much in line with the Donald Trump we've all come to not be surprised by now for decades. As the New York Times reports, quote, Mr. Trump's penchant for hyperbole has defined every stage of his career, from real estate mogul to reality television impresario to U.S. president. And when it comes to business, Trump has conceded making the occasional exaggeration, once remarking that everyone inflates the worth of their assets, but that he did not do so beyond reason. But the question of whether such misstatements were simply showmanship or a pattern of fraud is now at the heart of the New York Attorney General's civil inquiry into the former president and his family business. James's filing was in response to last month's attempt by the ex-president to shut down her investigation and quash the subpoenas served to him and his kids. The Trump Org responded yesterday by calling James's probe politically motivated and saying, quote, her allegations are baseless and will be vigorously defended. The AG's office said it has not yet reached a final decision regarding whether this evidence merits legal action. But even so, it is not the only state investigation examining the ex-president's actions that is picking up steam this week. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, quote, Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis is requesting a special grand jury to aid in her investigation of former President Donald Trump and his efforts to overturn Georgia's 2020 election results. Willis, who is looking into whether Trump committed a crime when he pressured Georgia's Secretary of State to find him 11,780 votes, cited the need to subpoena witnesses in her request, an authority a special grand jury would have. Intensifying investigations of the ex-president's conduct is where we start this hour with some of our most favorite reporters and friends. New York Times investigative reporter Suzanne Craig is here. She has covered the finances and taxes of Donald Trump and the Trump family since 2015, winning awards along the way. Also joining us, Harry Lipman, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General and former U.S. Attorney, and Donnie Deutsch is here, host of the On Brand podcast. I want to start with you, Harry Lipman, and let's take the two investigations separately. First, tell me what, sort of give me a viewer's guide, a non-lawyer viewer's guide to what Attorney General Tish James is saying in these filings.
Sure, because it isn't all that lawyerly, Nicole. Really, all she's saying is we have a right to depose Trump and his children, and there's not a big showing you have to make for that. So there's a little PR component. She's saying, since the Republicans and the Trumps have said this is in bad faith, let me tell you a few things that we have, and what they have are some really, really brazen lies. An exaggeration would not, or hyperbole would be, you know, nowhere near what we're talking about. Apartments that he said are three times as big as they really are. Non-existent mansions. All kinds of grotesque disparities between valuations for one purpose and for another that defraud either banks or insurance companies. So she's got a really strong 12 instances, letter and verse, flat-out brazen lies that she's saying, for that reason, I get a right to depose the higher-ups because so far the higher-ups haven't cooperated.
Donnie, some of what we know in terms of the evidence James has is from your friend Michael Cohen. Here he is on CNN yesterday.
So I have provided documentary evidence going back to the House Oversight Committee, to the Attorney General's office, as well as the District Attorney's office. So I know specifically the documents that they have. On top of that, I'm not the only one. There are about close to a dozen corroborating individuals, which is so important to me, considering Donald Trump labeled me as a convicted liar, simply so that he could denigrate me and he could ruin my credibility in the event that this case goes further and he ultimately has to sit for trial.
Donnie, do you know who the dozen corroborating individuals are, and does Michael Cohen?
Michael Cohen would know who they are. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them is not the COO. His name escapes me right now. We know that Weisselberg is not. He's standing trial coming up for tax fraud. I find the whole premise of this, of the defense, the Trump defense, that people are given to hyperbole. You can't, when you speak to the IRS, you can't speak to legal folks, say, oh, I was just exaggerating, you know? I mean, this Trump Tower apartment that I said is worth $300 million, where it's really worth $25 to $30 million, and I got a loan based on that as an asset, and there are 5 and 10 and 20 other examples like that. Like, oops, that's just hyperbole. That's if you're talking to Forbes and trying to get on the Forbes 400 list, not for bank statements, not for loan statements, not for insurance statements. So there is what we do know. And James knows this, and the New York District Attorney's Office knows this, is what Donald Trump has done and his children have done, anybody else would go to jail for. I could take 1,000 cases, and Harry would be able to talk to this better than me. So the question is, obviously, in the Attorney General's case, it's a civil case. They can take assets away from him, and we still haven't heard from Brett, what was Cy Vance's office, which is now Brett's office.
So, Suzanne, let me read this apartment part from the filing, which Donnie and Harry both alluded to. This was released this week. With respect to Trump's triplex apartment in Trump Tower, OAG has discovered that the valuations of this asset, as incorporated into the statements of financial condition since at least 2012, were based on the assertion that the triplex apartment was 30,000 square feet in size. The actual size of Trump's triplex apartment was only 10,996 square feet. Because these valuations were performed by multiplying the number of square feet times a price per square foot, the reduction in the apartment square footage in the valuation from 30,000 to 10,996 indicates that the valuations of Trump's triplex in the 2015 and 16, in the years 2015 and 16 were overstated by a factor of 3. As Weisselberg conceded in his testimony, Weisselberg admitted that this amounted to an overstatement of, quote, give or take $200 million. As Donnie's saying, Suzanne, these are exaggerations, lies that would land most of the rest of us in jail. What is the status right now based on what is public facing in this investigation?
Well, that exaggeration in itself necessarily wouldn't land you in jail. It's sort of what you do with it after you make the exaggeration. You can have the biggest, the best building. It can be worth $400 million. Where you get into trouble is where you submit false information to financial institutions, banks, insurance companies, and then you get a loan off of it. And that's potentially where you can get into hot water. What's interesting about what happened this week when I looked at all the documents was, it's a very, very common defense in this sort of situation is, well, I relied on the advice of professionals. I have accountants, I have lawyers. And what the Attorney General in New York is saying is that the Trump family and that's Donald Trump and his children were much more involved in these inflating these values than we previously known, and that they've overstated how much they relied on experts. Both can be true, that the Trump family could have been very involved and they could have had experts, but where the Attorney General is going with this and making a case is saying that the Trump family was just much more involved than we thought and was sending documents over and putting stuff in front of bankers to a degree that, you know, that could get them in trouble, and that's where that the Attorney General's heading on that.
And Suzanne, potentially consistent with that, the president's son, Eric Trump, invoked his Fifth Amendment right when he was brought in to testify. Is there any sense of what the line of questions were when he did that?
I think that they were asked about all of these valuations. You know, Eric Trump in particular is very involved in Seven Springs, one of the properties that they're looking at in terms of the valuations that were placed on it. That was definitely among the questions. But there, you know, that was the range would have been all the properties that he touched, which is most of them. And taking the Fifth Amendment in a civil case can be used against you. I sense that's why, or one of the, I think the Attorney General wants to interview all the Trumps, but once they are in front of her and they take the Fifth, it could be used against them in a civil case. So that's you know, something that's got to be on the Attorney General's mind and her investigators.
So then a lot of what we knew prior to these investigations starting to have any sort of public-facing tidbits or tea leaves was based on your reporting, which was based on documents that sort of a limited view, if you will, of what happened in terms of how Trump paid taxes and what he claimed and what he valued. And a lot of what the investigators now have as a result of the Supreme Court decision to turn over and to have access to some of the accountants and some of the banks. What are you waiting to see based on all that you knew going into this and all that they have in addition to what you were able to see and understand?
Well, I think what's powerful about, you know, when we did a lot of this work in 2018 in particular, to have his taxes is one thing. We had 20 years of corporate and personal tax information for stories that we did in 2020. But what is so powerful is when you have, and we had the advantage of this in 2018 in the story that we did on Fred Trump's wealth, Donald Trump's father, is just putting all these pieces together and seeing not just the taxes, but the bank statements. You know, I was looking through the filings from the Attorney General the other night, and they've got so much information from the accounting firm. There's information from banks. There's depositions. When you put all this together, it's very powerful, and I think we're going to see both something coming out of the Attorney General. And then there's a separate criminal case going on in Manhattan where they also just have reams of documents, and it's how they all come together and how they speak to each other once you have them all, and you're able to see, okay, well, here's money coming in here. Here's a valuation here. You've got emails, and you can kind of see who is talking to who and what happened.
Yeah, and you know, Harry, what is sometimes unsatisfying is that from the outside, these investigations necessarily have to hunker down and go through all the documents Suzanne's talking about. But there was some reporting about the kinds of folks, forensic attorneys and accountants who came in. And I wonder if you can speak to what this investigation has in front of it that we have never seen before. What will be new?
Sure. Well, first of all, as to the 12 who have cooperated, they are largely the sort of accountants and lower down folks who say, you know, I didn't say it was 30,000 feet. That was the information I was given. But what is new? You're going to have a paper case necessarily in either the civil or criminal context. But what you have that is sort of a goldmine for prosecutors, kind of as Suzanne is saying, is the contrast. Here is what they said to the tax folks. Oh, here is what they said to the bankers to get the loans. Look at this. You know, three-time discrepancy. That's not really hard to show. So that will be one. And then you'll have testimony from the likes of Michael Cohen that will speak exactly to this degree of involvement. Nothing happened without Trump's say-so. And moreover, one of his points of say-so was don't ever email me, don't ever put stuff in writing. So that's going to give a sort of portrait of almost a criminal enterprise with really a routine pattern of cheating, either taxes or insurance companies, depending.
Donnie, you've characterized Donald Trump's sort of reputation pre-political career as someone known to be shady. How does someone take a reputation and then go around? I mean, Michael Cohen seems to be so focused on this corroboration that has taken place since his testimony before the House. I believe it was under questioning from Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where he described the process, and I think it was around a football transaction, that he inflated his assets to try to buy a football team, and he deflated them to try to get insurance. I mean, that has been testified to by Cohen, but clearly the painstaking work of corroborating all that, finding the papers, what has taken so long. What is your sense of whether all those allegations have been borne out, or whether Cohen still gets called in to answer extra questions and provide new leads for people who can corroborate those allegations?
Cohen's been called in, I think, 11 times already. And last time I was on the show, we were on the subject, you asked about timing, and he was being told by the lead prosecutors that the words were something's imminent, you know, that something's coming. And you just have to use, and Harry knows this better than I, common sense. They're not doing all this for a dance. You know, it's good on the roosters going to come, and they're going to, the chickens or the roosters or some hens, what is it, they come to that, what's that saying? Chickens and roosters. The other interesting thing, just taking this politically for a second, you know, you just wonder, you know, everybody's talking about how he just owns the Republican Party, and you just wonder, the January 6th stuff, this stuff, in a new NBC News poll, they asked Republicans, is your allegiance to the party first or to Trump first? And 56% said to the party first and only 38% to Trump. That's a tremendous, tremendous switch. And you just wonder if this stuff, even just from a legal point of view, beyond the legal point of view, starts to chip away, and where people will start to say, you know, maybe DeSantis looks a little bit, we just don't need any more of this. But on the flip side, you've got the Maggie Hickman tweet saying, well, now we know more than ever he's going to certainly run to protect himself. But this is chipping away. I really believe this does chip.
Well, and I'll tell you more about the report.
I don't know.
Go ahead, Suzanne.
Well, and I think the other issue is that it could be, I don't want to say great for his reputation, but I think people will see him as possibly, you know, they're just going after him and he didn't do anything. And this is just a, you know, to use his phrase, a witch hunt. I don't think it necessarily will chip away, and I think prosecutors, when they're looking at this, they're weighing that issue about sort of charges and that's on their minds as they're going forward. I think if you bring a case and it doesn't work, like in Manhattan, it's a criminal case, if they bring charges and it doesn't go their way, it just lifts him. So I think that cuts both ways when I think of it.
Harry, is that appropriate? That the potential politics are weighing on prosecutors who are making decisions about charging?
I mean, the short answer is no. There's politics and there's politics. So we think about Merrick Garland, who does serve at the pleasure of the president, might think, is he stepping on a hornet's nest? But I do think James has led with her chin a little bit starting in the campaign, where she basically gave reasonable people some basis for thinking she really was going after him. It should be without regard to that. She says in her statement it's without regard to that, but that's going to be the theme that they're going to, you know, beat again and again and again if she does bring charges.
Let me just say, if he were to commit a crime on tape, they'd do that anyway, which seems to be the case in Georgia, Harry Lipman, where he committed campaign fraud on a phone call with a bunch of people listening, asking Brad Raffensperger to find him 11,780 votes, exactly the margin of victory for President-elect Joe Biden. What is the significance of a special grand jury potentially being convened there?
Yeah, I always thought this was the most dangerous case for him. It's discreet, it's clean, it's got what prosecutors love, an audio tape, and goes through it. The special grand jury itself, Nicole, is not the biggest news. It's what you need to have a more than 2-month-long investigation that you can subpoena folks and bring them in and out. I'm surprised she didn't do it earlier, but it does certainly show her resolve. And And she's really dangerous for Trump because she's not subject to the same kind of political cross currents and disincentives. She's one DA, and she has a strong, clean, simple case under Georgia law. The grand jury itself just is a necessary component to investigating it. If they actually bring the charges, it will be to a regular grand jury. They'll say, here's what the special guys found. Will you please vote this crime as an indictment?
A whole lot of jury duty for a whole lot of Americans just to keep Donald Trump accountable. Suzanne, Greg, Donnie Deutsch, thank you so much for starting us off on this news this hour. Harry will be back later in the hour, and when we come...
Now, this is what this, let me turn this down here. This is what they have found This is what they found. New York Attorney General, which is what she found. He altered 6 properties, as it was said in our latest audio. 6 properties. I think one is the Doral also. And you know it. He's nothing without his golf courses. Nobody would even know him. Only the insiders would know him. That's what that's about. That is. This man is a complete moron. A complete moron. And what are we going to do with him? We're going to have to do something with this man. Now, the AG, Letitia James, her investigations in Donald Trump are fabulous. Fabulous. Wrong thing coming up here. Come on. I turned on something here. Okay, now we're back. Investigators said in court papers now. Now, before you get that, Giuliani has been his master, a lawyer. We would say, oh, Giuliani's going to get him off. Giuliani's not getting him off. He's going to send that curriculum down to see her before she goes on vacation, and what I need to do is I need to speak to her before he goes down. The Office of New York State Attorney General with Letitia James is looking into whether Donald Trump's family business has inflated property values for financial purposes. Investigators said in a court paper that filed Tuesday, they have uncovered misleading evidence, significant evidence, that suggests the company tied fraudulent, misleading, and excessive values to the lenders, insurers, and the IRS to secure favorable loans in tax benefits and insurance coverage. Now, there's been a major... which I'll get to in just a minute. Major, probably, Donald Trump couldn't get this by himself. First of all, he's not smart enough. Second of all, he wasn't in control of any of these banks. But Deutsche Bank is another product. Now, the filing said investigators haven't decided whether or not they will bring the lawyers over the evidence to the courts. But James asked the court to compel Donald J. Trump and Jr. and Ivanka to have an early reply. And he, as I said, I'm looking at a piece of insurance that would never, ever pass the smell test. Trump drafted an executive order also that we just heard that have allowed Defense Department to seize all voting machines. This is Pastor Commentatus. Just writing that in the paperwork is enough to make it Pastor Commentatus. Now, this was never distributed, this particular one, but it was written. Now, going back to Trump and his 6 properties, they were named in the documents of cases of companies fraudulent valuations. The Seven Rings Estate. Trump Tower Triplex. Park Avenue Building. 40 Wall Street. And golf courses in Westchester and Scotland. These are the places that he inflated. Now, Letitia James' office alleged that when Trump looked to refinance 40 Wall Street in 2015, his statement of financial condition estimated to be $735 million that one leader valued. Let me read that again. His statement financial conclusion estimated a $735 million valuation of the property. This is 40 Wall Street. But one lender valued it at nearly $257 million. Now, how do you get almost a $500 million difference? I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. In 2014, value of his golf course in Aberdeenshire, Scotland, was $435 million. Patricia James claimed that the valuation was inflated by the Trump organization's assumption that it could build 2,500 luxury homes there, despite that it was only approved to build fewer than 1,500 holiday apartments. See, he has a golf course that says, hey, why play golf and have to travel 25 miles to get to your place where you're sleeping? Why not sleep on the property? So he was going to build a hotel that was only for the ultra-rich that would sleep 2,500 rooms. Well, it's only estimated they could only sleep 1,500. So again, he inflated it. Investigators have also accused the Trump organization of inflation, the size of Trump's penthouse resident in Trump Tower by nearly triple. He tripled everything. As we're going to hear what Stephen Colbert said about Trump, what he tripled. We're just waiting. We'll hear that. We'll play that next. Let's see. Where am I? Oh, yeah. Penthouse apartment in Trump Tower, he exceeded by more, he tripled, I should say, from 10,996 square feet to over 30,000 square feet. Now, how do you change the size of your apartment or anybody coming in to see? We're going to get to it. The person over at Deutsche Bank who was responsible for that resigned. Just resigned. Okay? The alleged inflation led to $327 million valuation of the apartment, which longtime Trump organization CFO Alan Weisberg told investigators was about, it's only about $200 million worth more than what it really is, give or take. A spokesman for the Trump organization hit back at the fine in a statement dismissing the allegation as baseless and promising accusations will be greatly defended, vigorously defended. Come on, how you make a $200 million is baseless? When he listed it for $327 million, it with one bank, and then went over on his tax return, listed it at $200 million. Come on, the only reason why there wasn't notice because then he became president. And by law, it's got to be seen. The only one misleading the public, Letitia James said, is Donald Trump. He defrauded New Yorkers by basing his entire candidacy on a promise to get Trump at all GG base. I'm sitting on a couch with my feet up because last night I was on my feet too long and my legs swollen. So let me read this again. Letitia James promised that when she got elected, she would get Donald Trump. She got rid of his his money laundering campaign scheme. She got rid of his steaks and water. She got rid of his money laundering, his private fund that he had. He got rid of that. Now she's going to get rid of the sole thing that's keeping him wealthy, and that's the Donald Trump empire. And they're saying that's the only reason why she has prestige charges, because when she ran for office, her candidacy was a promise to get Trump at all costs without having a shred of evidence in violation of every conceivable ethical rule. A lawsuit filed in federal court last month on behalf of Trump and his family business aimed to get the civil inquiry of her involvement in a similar criminal action thrown out. Trump Organization Vice President Eric Trump responded by doubling down on the company's allegation that James is motivated by her political business. That's why little Eric took the Fifth Amendment over 500 times. Because he's the only one now to appear before the Letitia James Court. In a tweet, Trump called the investigation window dressing for his abuse of office and ethical misconduct, which we are promising for you, which we are promising for you, adding that the probe is a PR move to revive political career after your gubernatorial disaster. Well, this is what Trump said. Now, she ran for the governor of New York and she didn't make it. Okay. Now, these are some of the things that were definitely on the mind of Mr. Trump and also his friend Matt Gaetz and Stephen Bannon. They're now being linked to the Oath Keepers. So that's another thing that was just said the other day. So there's a lot, not the Oath Keepers, the other crew, the Patriots. Not, I should say Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers are gone to the tubes. They're gone. So let me see. I promised to have this thing here for you, and I will play it. This is the one that Colbert played. Now, just listen to this. Or should I go to the one? Maybe we go to the one that's 21. No, we'll go to 21. Okay, this is the one. Stephen Colbert talks about Trump.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome to the Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Now, I know it doesn't seem like it has been that long, but truth is, tomorrow is 1 year of Joe Biden's presidency. And to mark the occasion, yeah, give it up, hell of a year. Hell of a year for everybody. To mark the occasion, for some reason, they had a press conference today. Then again, he's 79. I guess he's always going to go for the early bird special. I'll have the orange, Ruffy. The president outlined the various ways his administration is trying to fight the pandemic without additional shutdowns.
We have the tools. Vaccines, boosters, masks, tests, pills to save lives and keep businesses and schools open.
Yes, we have a lot of tools to save lives. Unfortunately, we also have a lot of tools who refuse to use those tools. Speaking of which, it's a big day for America's nostrils because you know it's coming. Because today, the White House launched the U.S. government's free COVID testing kit website, covidtest.gov. Go there. Get them. They're waiting. You paid for them. You already paid for them. Go get them. All you got to do is log on, put in your address, and the feds will send you 4 free at-home COVID-19 tests. 4 tests, okay? four tests. That's one swab for each nostril and two for, you know, dealer's choice. It works. It works wherever you put them. That's what I hear. Is that true? They're telling me that's not true. I think it's true. Anyway, got to play to find out. The White House actually launched the site yesterday, one day ahead of schedule. So 677 days into the pandemic, we got access to free tests one day sooner than we thought. Thank you, sir. That's why he moved up the press conference. That's why he moved it up. So far, free and accessible health care is pretty popular. As of last night, covidtest.gov had more than 1 million visitors, which is more than 40 times as many as the government site with the next highest traffic, which I assume is shirtlessdougemhoff.gov/yardwork. I did not expect him to be so kind. He got himself together. The Clippers work the obliques, man. Now, I mean, there were a few hiccups. Some people who live in apartment buildings received error messages saying tests already been ordered for their address. So, okay, to make up for it, the post office is going to send those people 1,000 Blue Apron mailers and a water bill for someone who lived there 20 years ago. The free test isn't the only good news. Experts say the end of the Omicron wave is in sight. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. It's in sight, though I can't see it because my glasses are always fogged up from my mask. One group that can't wait for COVID to end is librarians, because some public libraries are being used as coronavirus test distribution sites, and librarians have become the latest frontline workers, and they do not appreciate the banging of pots and pans. In certain cities, it took a while for you to realize, about a year ago we used to, and in certain cities like the Washington, D.C., public libraries provided PCR tests that patrons had to take home to use, then deposit in a drop box at the library. So, your test will be held in the same sanitary laboratory conditions as sticky copies of Pat the Bunny and a broken VHS of Gremlins 2. The system works. Gremlins 2 fan. Gremlins 2, 2 fan. Oh, yeah. System works, but maybe too well. Because now, library phones ring every few minutes with yet another call asking medical questions library workers aren't trained to answer. Haven't we given librarians enough to do? They're already our babysitters, our tutors, and the only ones brave enough to ask that man at the computer to please close his pornography tabs during the puppet show. We've also closed the tabs. That is great news. We've also got COVID news from Florida. Today we learned the Florida Department of Health suspended a medical director after he sent an email encouraging staff to get vaccinated. Yeah, well, I mean, come on, it's kind of presumptuous of him to assume that residents of Florida have the will to live. They made a choice. The official in question is Dr. Raul Pino, who leads the health department in Orange County. In an email to his department earlier this month, Pino wrote that he was concerned that only 219 out of 568 staff members had received two doses of the vaccine, adding, "I am sorry, but in the absence of reasonable and real reasons, it is irresponsible not to be vaccinated. I have a hard time understanding how we can be in public health and not practice it." It is. He's right. It is hard to understand. Yet another Florida mystery, like why do so many old people move there the minute they get too slow to outrun an alligator? I don't understand. Ring the dinner bell. There's bad news for former President Girth Wind and Liar. The last 3 years, he has been under civil investigation by New York Attorney General Letitia James. Well, last night, the James gang is here. Well, Last night in court filings, James outlined a pattern of possible fraud at the former president's business. That's believable, certainly more believable than a pattern of business of the former president's fraud. James filed this motion in response to the former president's attempts to block her from questioning him and two of his adult children under oath. Lord, please make that happen. Please. I don't ask for much, and I don't ask often. All I want before I die is to see Don Jr. swear in on a jar of hair gel. The only thing he believes in. James says that her office has uncovered significant evidence that the former president fraudulently valued multiple assets, including his own private residence. He claimed the triplex apartment was 30,000 square feet in size, but the actual size was just under 11,000 square feet. Yeah, that's no surprise. He's known for falsely tripling the size of his assets. He once told Stormy Daniels his penis was 3 inches. But the former president's biggest fraud continues to be his claim that he won re-election. The House Select Committee on January 6th is busy getting to the bottom of that lie, and yesterday they subpoenaed Rudy Giuliani. At long last, we might finally find out if Rudy actually said and did what we saw him say and do live on TV. The panel wants to know everything about how Rudy pushed false claims that the former prez won the 2020 election and are seeking all the documents he has relating to the seizure of voting machines, contact with members of Congress, and any arrangements for his attorney's fees. And The Late Show has acquired one of Rudy's invoices, $40,000 for attorney's fees, and $10,000 for Franzia, kiddie pool full of. And it's not just Rudy. The Select Committee has also subpoenaed the phone records of former second son, Eric. Could be good. Not sure how much you can learn from the phone records of someone who answers the scam likely number hoping it's his dad. Speaking of phones, today Verizon and AT&T have turned on a major new part of their 5G networks. Of course, if you got the vaccine, you already have 5G. But to access the new network, you're going to have to initiate a hard reset. Just insert a paperclip into the back of your neck while holding down the Bluetooth button on your giant balls. Okay? There's one small problem. Officials are worried 5G signals could lead to airplane crashes. Okay, but on the bright side, you can stream Yellow Jackets all the way down. See, because they use similar segments of the radio spectrum, some officials are worried that 5G service will interfere with sensitive instruments that measure altitude on some planes. Okay, well then to protect it, why don't they just put the plane into airplane mode?
Okay. Airplane mode. Let me read this. This says here, if I can get it before it goes off, which I can't. Where's my, here it is. Sotomayor, Attorney General Sotomayor, just said that Justice Department, if I can get back now, where the heck is that? Okay, I can get it back. Let's see. Come on. It says, what happened? Yep. How did I do this? I have this new, it must be to the back, so let me go back a little bit here. No, it's got to be to the front. So let me go front a little bit here. I have the Fire Stick now. And everything is a little weird. And okay, let me go back a little bit. I got it now, if I can get it. Let's see here. Yep, there it is. Let's see. Did I get it? No, I didn't. No, come on. Come on. Yes, you got to know what I'm doing for me to stay here. No, I know that's not what it's going to be. Okay. Okay. So let's see here. I'll put that on, turn it off, and go back just a little bit here. Justice Sotomayor just came on with, of course I missed it. Came on and back. Let me go back a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Right here, yes, okay. Now, I hope that's what, nope, it didn't stop. I have a hard time turning it off as soon as it gets up here. I don't know what the story is. All right, now. How come? I just got to go back one. And I'll stop it. Try to just hold on just a minute again. Did I just saw it? Nope. Come on. Just hold on, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry for the hold up here. I'm trying to get this reading. Oops, there I got it. Now, Justice Sotomayor slams the court's decision in Texas abortion case. The state legislature enacted a convoluted law that instills terror in those. Why am I going so fast here? I'm trying to read it, and I'm trying to read it, and it's not reading that well. There it is. Why can't I hold it? Why can't I hold it? Nope, it's too far. We're going to get this. We are going to get this. And I'm going to read this because this is there. Now, what does that say? All right. Justice Sotomayor slams the court case decision in Texas abortion law. Why is it going back? Now, let's see if it goes back. Yes. Okay. State legislature enacted a convoluted law that instills terror in those who assist women exercising their rights. Said if... Now, I thought I had this on pause, which I'm trying to put it on pause, which I don't know why it's not going to pause. For the first time, the court declined to protect pregnant sections from violations of their constitutional rights. The court may look the other way, but I cannot. Okay. Now she went on to say, I don't understand why this is not stopping. This is for the fourth time. This court, that's the court over there that rules Texas. And she came out up. The state legislature enacted in convoluted law that instills terror in those who women their rights to law. The officials knew that the fear of the confusion would restrict citizens from accessing constitutionally protected medical care. She goes on to say, providers from offering it and federal courts from restoring it. This case is a disaster for the rule of law and grave disservice to women in Texas. We have a right to control their own bodies. I will not stand by silently as the state continues to nullify this constitutional guarantee. This was Justice Sotomayor said, I will not stand by. And remember, and damn thing they can do to her. So, she said providers from offering it and federal courts from restoring it. That's what she said. So they appear right now to overturn Roe versus Wade. Now, why did they vote? Why did they vote? Why did they vote to overturn, to not overturn the what they decided against Nixon, but they would decide to overturn a law that's been 50 years in the making? Why would they do that? That makes no sense to me. They did not do it with Trump. So, okay, you can't get his papers. You can't get his papers. But going the, which has been a law since 1974. So why did they go and now say, we have to make sure that this clown show of Trump, we can not let that, we can't let that go by, but we will let something go by that both Republicans and Democrats, and the leading voices to overturn it were the Republicans back in 1972. Well, this is just this is around the same time. I mean, why would they do that? So we have to think that there's something really bad going on here. We know now that, and we've known for a while, that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's wife has been, she's been everything except in the Oath Keepers. She has been so straightforward in claiming that the president has all the right to do anything he wants, and that we can do anything we want with our, women can do nothing about what they want with their bodies. This makes no common sense. Makes no common sense whatsoever. Makes no common sense. So why are we going to see the week? Let me see if I can get this on here. Why? Okay, I don't want this voice on. This is something else to come up. The week of its 49th birthday, Roe versus Wade is hobbled. Not only is it unlikely to make it 50 in any recognizable form, but for millions of women across the country who live in states where abortion is almost unobtainable, even now, it might well as be already have been gone. Because in some states, like Texas, forget it, it's a done deal. That's right, it's a done deal. So, where are we now in this country in things that we enjoyed for years? Where are we now? We're gone. Forget it. It's almost, everything's almost gone. And before we leave, I want to play this last thing that Nicole Wallace had with Carol Lennig. And did Pence slide into the presidency to stop the insurgents? We don't know that yet, but we're going to find out, because somebody has done the talking already. You just listen to this.
So Neil and Carol, I'm coming back to you with these same, I can't come up with a better word, and I should work at it, but just bombshells that the committee, you know, has this testimony that essentially, and I ran this down because those were my memories from the White House. You can't just slide into the chain of command, but clearly Donald Trump never called in the National Guard that day, Neil.
Yeah, so I think, Nicole, you're pointing to a possible third bombshell here with your eagle eyes, which is this White House counsel may have concluded that Trump's request to Pence would violate the Constitution and the laws. In a way, that's not surprising news because it frankly just means the Trump attorney can read English, because it would have been a clear violation of the law for Pence to do what Trump wanted. So in that sense, it's not surprising that a Trump attorney would conclude that this was illegal, because it was obviously illegal. But that's, of course, not always a foregone conclusion when you're talking about Trump attorneys, people like Rudy Giuliani, who, you know, don't have any respect for the law. But Carol's explanation, and then Carol's also a close reader, what she said is, well, the letter says today from Congress says that they concluded it may violate the Constitution. And here's where I do think there's a bombshell, because, yes, that's what the Congressional Committee concluded. But putting myself in the shoes of a White House counsel lawyer, any real lawyer would have been definitive about this. This isn't something which you say, we advise you not to do this or something like that. But this would be true with any client who you think is about to engage in criminal acts. You say in big letters, no. In particular, when we're talking about Donald Trump, who only like reads big block letter Sharpie pen language, it's inconceivable to me that if the White House counsel so concluded it was illegal, that this would have been caveated or couched. It would have been explicit in bold letters.
Yeah, and Carol, there is some history. In as much as Donald Trump's White House didn't function like any White House that had come before it, there was some history of the McGahn counsel's office having a chief of staff who took notes, of the McGahn counsel's office at one point sort of straining the law and telling Trump that firing Comey wasn't advisable. There was a history of the White House counsel's office under prior White House counsels, not under Cipollone, but putting things, writing things to file, such as firing Mueller, could be viewed as obstruction of justice. So for as bizarro as this White House was, there was some, at least, you know, faint muscle memory inside the White House counsel's office to writing memos to file about occasions in which Donald Trump was clearly breaking the law. The other thing that I keep thinking as a staffer, if you're a staff, and I keep thinking of who's already complied, and Mark Short, Pence's chief of staff, has trashed the 1-6 committee, but he's complied with the 1-6 committee subpoena, which was to provide documents and testimony. If you're a staffer for Pence, you're desperate for the White House counsel's office to give your boss some legal cover for doing something that's politically catastrophic for him, which is defying Donald Trump's request to overturn the will of the American people. So the likelihood that there's something in writing from the counsel's office seems at least plausible.
It does seem plausible. And let me just geek out one more time on this and say the exact language of this letter is that we have information that Pat Cipollone may have concluded that this was unconstitutional and illegal, right? So may have concluded. So they have information that such a record may exist. And Zoe Lofgren just sort of gave us a little hint there under your very polite interrogation. She gave us a good hint, which is, and we're going to get some records, and we think a lot of them are probably
right.
going to be from the counsel's office.
Let's
help us figure all
yeah.
this out.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that Neil's right. If there was a conclusion, it was a firm one, but they're getting evidence sort of secondhand that Pat Cipollone and his team may have reached this conclusion. Another important question, geeking out, is Miss Ivanka Trump, do you have any information that this was shared with your dad? Because that tells me, again, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, if you're a prosecutor or a reporter, any investigator worth your salt, it tells me someone told them Ivanka is aware of this conclusion. Ivanka is aware of conversations with her father about this conclusion and this warning from, potentially, I should say, warning from Cipollone's office. I would also say I really appreciated you flagging and asking Congresswoman Lofgren about the MIA quality of the president, that the evidence that they have, but seems almost like a bludgeon at this point. You know,
yeah.
he didn't contact the attorney general. There's no evidence, I should say, that they contacted the attorney general
right.
when Congress members were in fear for their lives. He didn't contact, as far as they know, they have no record of him contacting the Department of Defense, not his secretary, not his chairman of Joint Chiefs, and Chris Miller has corroborated that in his testimony. They have evidence that he didn't talk to the FBI. And meanwhile, Phil and I, in our book, we revealed that Pence did exactly as you described, Nicole, slid into the role of being commander-in-chief, was the person on the phone with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, was on the phone from his hideaway with the Secretary of Defense saying, we've got to clear the Capitol. We've got to get this country safe again. That's just, A, not following process, but B, seems to have been the only course that Pence could have taken because the president was bickering with his staff about whether or not he should ask his followers to stop attacking members of Congress.
Yeah, a former very senior national security advisor said to me that if you're Mark Milley, it might have been enough. You know, a call from Mike Pence might have been enough. The chain of command might have, to your point, Carol, at that hour, been murky. The president wasn't seen after the ellipse on the rally when he called for the attack, when he called for the march on the Capitol and called for Mike Pence to do the right thing. And I'm reminded in the letter that the tweet attacking Mike Pence comes out in the 2 o'clock hour. The attack on the Capitol started in the 1 o'clock hour. The violence was underway, and he incites more violence toward Mike Pence. So I don't know what Ivanka Trump does now for a life or a job, but it seems like that'd be something she'd want to clear up where she came down on all that conduct from the ex-president. Neil Katyal, Carol Lenig, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I could have talked to you the whole hour. Thank you.
Well, we're in a rush here, but I wanted to tell you about the, because I got one more thing to play, but I need to tell you about this. Remember, you spoke about the monies that Trump was getting from the banks. Well, he was getting most of it from all of it, maybe, from Deutsche Bank. And Deutsche Bank was convicted of quite a few undercover secret dealings, shenanigans with the over in Europe. And they came over here and we started doing real business. He said, now, President, longtime banker, Deutsche Bank, who arranged for the German lender to make hundreds of millions of dollars to his company, is stepping down. Rosemary Verablick, a managing director and senior banker at Deutsche Bank's wealth management division, recently handed in her resignation, which the bank accepted, according to the spokesman, Daniel Hunter. I chose to resign my position with the bank effective December 31st, and I'm looking forward to my retirement. She's 60 years old. The result of Ms. Verablick's abrupt resignation was not clear. Deutsche Bank is in August opened up an internal review into the 2013 real estate transaction between Ms. Verablick and a company owned in part by Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of Mr. Trump, and a client of Mrs. Verablick's, Dominic Scalzi, a longtime colleague of Mrs. Verablick, who played a role in the transition, will also leave the bank. So there are two people there. One, because remember, Kushner owed 600 million dollars was due in a loan that he got from that third street apartment building, 66 Third Avenue, I should say. Yes, 666 Third Avenue. So he was going to lose that, and that would have been everything because he has everything tied up in it. So he got a loan from them to bring him up, and he got a loan from overseas, the overseas people in what's that place? Barabi, one of those places over there. He got the loan from. Anyway, so that's where they act. They got money from people in different countries and from banks that have been dealing undercover stuff with them for years. So we're going to have more on this next week as the week goes by. And let me just play this. Stephen Colbert was a hit last night. Oh, gosh. Just listen to this.
Today. It is exactly 1 year since Joe Biden stood on the Capitol steps and took the oath of office. It seems like...
been a big year. It seems like just yesterday our democracy was being held hostage by a cabal of obstructionists who didn't want every vote counted. Oh, wait. That was yesterday. Now, Biden has accomplished everything he has set out to do, not everything. He promised no malarkey. The lawyers made him change it to produce in a factory that also processes malarkey. Biden is determined. He is determined to let the doubters know he will last another year. So yesterday, he held a marathon two-hour press conference. I say kudos to him. The only marathon most 79-year-olds complete is a MeTV's Monday Matlock Lock. In fact, good show. It's a quality show. In fact, Biden wasn't scheduled to go that long, but you got to give the people what they want.
Okay, no president.
Whoa. Hang on, guys. We've only gone an hour and 20 minutes. I'll keep going. But I'm going to go. Let me get something straight here. How long are you guys ready to go? You want to go for another hour or two? Okay. I'm going to go. I tell you what, folks. I'm going to go another 20 minutes to a quarter of. Okay?
You want more, Joe? You want more? Okay. I'll tell you what. That's good. Because my friend Commodore Lionel Richie once said, we're going all night long, all night, all night, all night long. For the next 20 minutes, I'm 79, I got to pee. Today, Biden did a little damage control over some of the things he said yesterday about the looming Russian invasion of Ukraine. Now, if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on for weeks, Russian President Vladimir Putin has been massing troops on Ukraine's border because we really don't know. One advisor to the Kremlin, who was asked what Putin was trying to accomplish, replied, "The expert opinion that I can authoritatively declare is, who the heck knows? This may lead to World War III. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a, I don't know." But when asked what Putin was going to do, Biden wasn't nearly so vague.
My guess is he will move in. He has to do something.
He has to do something? I hate to see Joe as a hostage negotiator. Why don't we all just calm down? You just let everyone go, okay? Or shoot the hostages. You gotta do something. I wanna be home in time for Matlock. Now, here's the thing. A lot of props tonight. Here's the thing. Thank you, sir. Here's the thing. Last week, administration officials told reporters that there would be no distinction made between a small incursion into the Russian-speaking part of Ukraine and an all-out invasion of Ukraine. But Biden begged to differ.
It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having to fight about what to do and not do, et cetera.
You can't tell them that a little bit is okay. There's a reason Nancy Reagan's anti-drug campaign wasn't just say no unless it's your cousin's wedding. A little bump of coke in the bathroom's not going to kill you. YOLO. Biden, it's your cousin's wedding. Come on, you'll dance. You'll dance. Biden did have a warning, sort of.
I think he'll pay a serious and dear price for it that he doesn't think now will cost him what it's going to cost him. And I think he'll regret having done it.
I wouldn't say regret is a big concern for a man who shows this much nipple. You can use him as one of those springy doorstops. Cat plays with it. Biden then spelled out that Russia can't afford the sanctions he would impose if they did invade.
Everybody talks about how Russia has control over the energy supply that Europe absorbs. Well, guess what? That really that they earn from that makes about 45% of the economy. I don't see that as a one-way street. They go ahead and cut it off. It's like my mother used to say, you bite your nose off to spite your face.
I'm pretty sure the expression is cut off your nose to spite your face. I'm not sure it's even possible to bite off your own nose. Mama Biden was loaded with folksy sayings like, time flies when you throw a watch. Absence makes the heart grow fungus. And a bird in the hand is worth two up the butt. That one's true. That one is true. There's also news about former President Tyrannosaurus Rex. Last night, the Supreme Court rejected his bid to withhold documents from the January 6th committee by a vote of 8-1. He lost again. He is losing so much, he's going to get tired of losing. No surprise, the Supremes rejected his argument. The former president wanted to use executive privilege to keep the January 6th document secret, even though President Biden declined to invoke executive privilege over them. He wanted some sort of executive privilege. Well, I'm sorry, sir. The only privileges former presidents are entitled to are free paddleboard rentals, 20% off at Michael's Crafts, and discounts on Jimmy and Roz Carter's amazing shrinking powder. But that's not Photoshop. That's not free trade. Honey, I've come to see you. Within hours of the decision, the National Archives began turning over hundreds of pages of documents to the committee. And they are getting some juicy stuff, y'all. Among the January 6th materials the ex-president wanted to keep secret, proposed talking points for Kelly McEnany, a draft text of a presidential speech for the Save America rally preceded the mob attack, and a handwritten note concerning January 6th. Now, we do not know who wrote the note. All we know is that it was written on a burger wrapper. But there's no way of knowing, John.
Nobody, there's no way of knowing, right.
Who wrote that.
It's hard to tell.
But it's not all good news from Washington, unfortunately. Last night, the Democrats came up short on a last-ditch effort to advance the voting rights bill. Here's the crazy part. Senate Democrats, who have a majority, unanimously supported the bill. But to pass it, they needed to win a separate vote to change the filibuster rules, which failed thanks to two who voted against it, Democratic senators and Republican senators, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. So they supported the voting rights bill, but they're unwilling to do what it takes to pass it. If that makes you mad, you're in good company, because last night, Senator Bernie Sanders brought the heat to the meat.
Everybody have a great weekend. Just listen to the rest of it. It's funny. Have a great weekend. Don't get snowed in.
So why are you wasting everybody's time and not voting for the rule change that allows us to pass the bill? You know, it's like inviting somebody to lunch, putting out a great spread, and saying you can't eat.
It's happened to me many times. You arrive for the event, and they say the luncheon table opens after the speakers. Then why lay out the cold cuts? And why am I seeing a cheap supermarket deli tray? The working people of this country deserve no less than freshly cut Zabar's pastrami, lean. Your choice of mild or spicy mustard, two soups, one lentil, one cream, no paper plate. It's a shanda. Where is my soup? Now, Sinema and Manchin don't deserve all of the rage. Lucky for us, there's plenty left over for the leader of the anti-voter coalition, Senate Minority Leader and sloppy first attempt at a pancake with blueberry eyes, Mitch McConnell. Yesterday, McConnell was asked about his reasons for opposing voter protections, and he made a very telling distinction about the way he categorizes voters.
What's your message for voters of color who are concerned about
without the Senate who is voting right then, you're not going to be able to vote in the midterm.
Well, the concern is misplaced, because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Wow. How embarrassing that it came out exactly how he meant it. Despite what Stonewall McConnell says there, there are a lot of problems with access to the polls. Take Texas. The League of Women Voters in Houston requested 16,000 voter registration forms before the March primary. They do it every 2 years. But the Texas Secretary of State's office refused this time, claiming it has only a limited amount of voter registration applications due to supply chain issues, increasing the cost of paper. Okay, then print it on something Texas does have, like guns or giant toast. The Secretary of State's office gave the League an option, though, saying, we have offered a copy of the print-ready PDF to your organization so they can print the desired quantity. So a charity is responsible for providing a basic governmental function? Well, this is Texas, where the highway signs say, road ends, BYO bridge.